The Philippines Justice Secretary shoots down President Duterte's order to arrest those who refuse to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Some Philippine lawmakers up in arms over government's decision to keep the face shield mandate. The U.S. confirms the Philippines is among the priority countries in its plan to donate 80 million COVID-19 vaccine doses. And the Liberal Party reaching out to possible top 2022 contenders Manila Mayor Isko Moreno and Senator Panfilo Lacson. Also later on in the program, we'll speak with Sorsogon Governor Francis Escudero about his bid to return to the Senate. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us today. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us. Let's begin with a threat from President Rodrigo Duterte for those who refuse to get vaccinated against COVID-19. He says, get vaccinated or face arrest. The president's warning comes amid reports vaccine hesitancy remains an issue.
I'm just exasperated by, you know, Filipinos not heeding the government. E total tayo dito, wala naman tayong hangarin kundi kabutihan ng ating bayan. So that 40%, hanapin ninyo yan. Kayong mga barangay captains, I'll task the DILG to do that. To look for these persons and kung hindi, I will order their arrest. Sa totoo lang. Why? Because if you are a person na hindi ka vaccinated, you are a career of a potential career. And to protect the people, I have to sequester you in jail. May mamili kayo. Magpabakuna kayo o ipakulong ko kayo sa silda.
The Philippine Food and Drug Administration says Filipinos shouldn't be concerned about vaccine brands. It emphasizes all of them are effective against the deadly virus, including the more contagious Delta variant.
So far, the data for Pfizer shows that for the UK variant, yung Pfizer vaccine po, mataas pa rin, nare-retain niya yung mataas na efficacy rate niya of 93%. Pagdating po doon sa Delta variant, although bumababa po ng konti, meron pa rin naman pong 88% no, na efficacy against the Delta variant. So there's a decreasing efficacy as we get more mutations, but hindi naman po completely nawawala ang bisa ng bakuna. It's still a useful vaccine.
For Philippine Senator Nancy Binay, vaccine hesitancy is not the main problem, but the lack of vaccine supply. Binay stresses government must first ensure there is a steady supply of jabs for the country to reach herd immunity.
Basic problema tayo sa supply, it's not as if ayaw ng mga kababayan natin magpabakuna. Ngayon lang, this morning, sa Manila, di ba, may mga kababayan tayo na I think madaling araw pa lang pumipila na sila dun sa vaccination centers para hindi sila abutan ng cut-off. So vaccine supply is the biggest problem. So we need to address that.
Infectious diseases expert Dr. Edsel Salvanya admits making vaccinations mandatory is difficult. He recommends improving government's information campaign on the importance of getting inoculated.
It's difficult to make vaccinations mandatory with an emergency use authorization vaccine. There still has to be an element of concern. The president did say he was exasperated. And so I'm not going to necessarily try to interpret exactly what he meant. But in that sense, you know, we really do highly encourage people to get vaccinated, not just for their own protection, but also for everyone's protection.
Justice Secretary Minardo Guevara also believes President Duterte was just trying to emphasize the importance of reaching herd immunity. He clarifies, arrests cannot be made as there is no law yet that makes COVID-19 vaccinations mandatory. The Philippines' face shield mandate that stays for both indoor and outdoor settings. President Duterte settled that debate upon the advice of health experts. Doctors insist face shields offer extra protection. They also assert the country must prevent the spread of the more transmissible Delta variant.
I will apologize to the Filipino people that this thing was being discussed openly. I'm constrained really to go back to the old practice because of this danger posed by the D variant. Kung wala lang sana yan, especially I said with the narratives that goes with it, in the international news and even dito sa locally, it's scary. So, I cannot afford to place the nation, the national interest of the Republic by just, sometimes adopting this and being lenient to this. I said, I know that it is a very tedious, if you may, but it is really to prevent a disaster of our nation.
An infectious diseases expert backs the use of face shields. Dr. Edsel Salvagna points out the Delta variant is nearly four times more infectious than the original strain that emerged in China. According to Salvagna, it only takes mere seconds of contact to get infected with the Delta variant.
What's happening in Australia right now, where they actually had one limousine driver who ferried international passengers get COVID, the Delta variant, and then he went to a mall and just passed by some people, and those people got COVID. So this was just a few moments. So right now, with an abundance of caution, it's probably better to use multiple layers.
Some senators hit the Philippine government's decision to retain the mandatory use of face shields. Senate President Vicente Soto III says it only reflects how poor government's pandemic response is. Senator Coco Pimentel also raising concerns over the policy. He says government should explain the science behind the decision. For Senator Nancy Binay, while face shields provide added protection from the coronavirus, she does not see the need to make its use mandatory.
Since tayo na nga lang yung may protocol na making it mandatory, how come yung numbers natin hindi maganda? Siguro dapat may consistency din tayo sa messaging, di ba? There's a disconnect when we require yung mga ordinaryong kababayan natin to wear face shield, pero may nakikita rin naman tayo na who's supposed to be implementing that guideline. So hindi nagsusuot ng face shield.
The health department reported 5,249 new COVID-19 cases Monday. That's the lowest daily tally in nearly 2 weeks. This brings the nationwide total to over 1,364,000. Active infections stand at 55,847. The death toll, meanwhile, climbed to 23,749. Philippines will be among the priority countries set to receive a portion of the COVID-19 vaccine doses that will be donated by the United States. The White House says around 16 million doses have been allocated for Asia. The bulk of that will go to South and Southeast Asian nations. The U.S. has committed to give away 80 million COVID-19 doses to countries in need. But the White House admits logistical challenges are causing delays in the delivery of the vaccines.
Well, first, let me say we're committed to allocating those doses. We've done exactly that. What we found to be the biggest challenge is not actually the supply. We have plenty of doses to share with the world, but this is a Herculean logistical challenge, and we've seen that as we've begun to implement. So, as we work with countries, we need to ensure that there's safety and regulatory information is shared. Some supply teams need needles, syringes, and alcohol pads. Transportation needs. Teams need to ensure that there are proper temperature storage, prevent breakage, and ensure the vaccine immediately clears customs.
More than 18 billion pesos in funds under the Philippines' second COVID relief package yet to be utilized. This is confirmed by Malacanang spokesperson Harry Roque. However, he did not explain why the funds remain unobligated. The law is set to expire on June 30th. Albay Representative Joey Salceda is pushing for a special session while Congress is in recess to discuss possibly extending the validity of Bayanihan 2.
And this is really, to the very least, unfortunate, no? Because our people has been asked, clamoring for ayuda, clamoring for, you know, subsidy. And here we have billions still not obligated. This shows the inefficiency of the executive in implementing these COVID-19 interventions, no? While we are still in this crisis.
Meanwhile, Senator Nancy Binay is urging the government to address the bottlenecks in the disbursement of funds.
Tatlong funds yung dinidisburse ngayon ng executive department. There's the 2020 budget, which was extended until December 2021, the 2021 budget, and then this Bayanihan 2 budget. Kaya nga kami, paulit-ulit namin silang sinasabihan na gastusin nyo na. People on the ground, they need that money. Hindi namin alam kung saan nagkakaproblema, kung saan naiipit yung pondo. Yung DBM ba yung may kasalanan? Is it the implementing agency? So siguro, yun yung magandang talagang himayin at tignan.
Oman agrees to lift travel restrictions for overseas Filipino workers. In exchange, the Philippine government will lift the temporary deployment suspension of OFWs to Oman, which it imposed last week. Oman had banned travelers from several countries, citing COVID-19 concerns.
Nagkaroon ng pagpupulong ang ating mahal na Secretary of Labor, si Secretary Bello, at saka yung Omani Ambassador dito po sa Pilipinas sa tulong po ng Philippine Envoy natin. Doon po sa pagpupulong na yun, nagkaliwanagan, no? Ipinaliwanag po ng Oman government through the ambassador na hindi nila intensyon na harangin yung pagpasok o yung entry ng ating mga OFWs at Filipino travelers going to Oman.
The German-Philippine Chamber of Commerce wants Filipino health workers bound for Germany to be exempted from the deployment limits set by Manila. Last week, the Philippines COVID-19 Task Force allowed 1,500 more Filipino medical professionals to work abroad after the original 5,000 cap was breached earlier this month. But GPCCI President Stefan Schmidt says the new ceiling is still not enough.
When Filipino healthcare workers need to come to Germany, right, they need to have what we call a B2 level language certificate, right? That alone mm-hmm. will take you one and a half years to achieve. And so they do this on their own private money and time. And now we have 2,000 people ready to deploy, but we have a cap there. But like we're looking somewhere in the region of 2,500 to 3,000 euros. As starting salaries, right? And then comes additional for nighttime work, weekend work, and the like.
In other news, President Duterte again lashes out at the International Criminal Court. He maintains he will never cooperate with its investigation into his bloody drug war. President Duterte insists the ICC has no jurisdiction over the country. He also again defended his crackdown on illegal drugs.
Itong ICC, bullshit itong, I will not, why would I defend or face an accusation before white people? You must be crazy. Yung mga kalumang colonizers ito noon, they have not atoned for their sins against the countries that they invaded, including the Philippines. Tapos ito ngayon sila, they're trying to set up a court outside our country and making us liable to face them. Walang alaw ng batas. Our laws are different. Our criminal procedure is very different. How are you supposed to get justice there? Tapos ako, maghaharap ng mga puti, let's say kayo, loko-loko pala kayo. My country to go down the drain. I will readily face a court being accused in a Philippine court before a Filipino judge.
Last week, the ICC's chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, asked the court to authorize a full investigation into the drug war killings in the Philippines. Meanwhile, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights says accountability for the drug war killings in the Philippines remains to be a major concern. In a speech before the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, Michelle Bachelet said she recognized the steps taken by the Philippine government in its internal review of alleged police killings. But she said the reinvestigation must produce meaningful results. She also called for the protection and participation of civil society and independent human rights groups in the review. Philippine Justice Secretary Minardo Guevara committed before the UN Human Rights Council last year to look into the drug war. But so far, the review panel has only managed to finish its first partial report covering 328 cases, and no charges have yet been filed against Erin Cops. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, Sorsogon Governor Francis Escudero making another run at a Senate seat. He'll join us later when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. We're back. We're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippines Justice Secretary shoots down President Duterte's order to arrest those who refuse to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Some Philippine lawmakers up in arms over government's decision to keep the face shield mandate. The U.S. confirms the Philippines is among the priority countries in its plan to donate 80 million COVID-19 vaccine doses. And the Liberal Party reaching out to possible top 2022 contenders, Manila Mayor Isko Moreno and Senator Pangilo Lacson. Back with more news, the Liberal Party is making moves to come up with what it calls the broadest possible coalition for the 2022 national elections. Let's get more details now from Katrina Domingo, joins us on the line. Katrina, what else can you tell us?
Hi, Kamina. That's right. Liberal Party President and Senator Kiko Pangilinan told reporters this morning that there have been efforts to reach out to several possible presidential candidates and incumbent senators to create what he calls the broadest unity possible for the 2022 national election. Among these, as you mentioned, are Manila Mayor Isko Moreno Domagoso, Senator Pangilo Lacson, and incumbent senators Nancy Binay and Joel Villanueva. Pangilinan says non-administration leaders and politicians should come together towards a clear direction to stand a chance against the political machinery of the Duterte administration, noting that any administration is a formidable candidate when it comes to campaigns and election season. Pangilinan admits that the LP needs to have thorough discussions with Moreno and with Moreno Domagoso and Lacson, as well as other senators, before creating a formal coalition, as they have different stances on several issues. Among these, for example, is the Anti-Terrorism Act, which Pangilinan has been against, but was offered by Lacson. Pangilinan tells us, Termina, that even Vice President Lenny Robredo is open to having these talks, as he says that we are all in a single boat that needs a single captain. When asked if the Liberal Party is willing to coalesce with PDP Laban President Manny Pacquiao, who is dealing with oppositors within his own party, Pangilinan says as long as Pacquiao is sincere and hit the polls since 2016 after former President Benigno Aquino III's administration. We recall, despite having the administration's machinery in the run-up to the 2016 national elections, LP standard-bearer Marlo has lost to President Rodrigo Duterte. And while Robredo won the vice presidency, her victory was challenged at least thrice by losing candidate former Senator Ferdinand Bongbong Marcos Jr. Now, during the 2019 midterm polls, Carmina, the LP-backed Ocho Derecho opposition slate was wiped out in the senatorial election. Now, just to give our viewers an idea on how important this coming election is for the Liberal Party, all opposition members in the Senate are outgoing senators, meaning Senate Minority Leader Franklin Drilon has already used up his two consecutive term limit in the Senate, while opposition senators Laila De Lima, Kiko Pangilinan, and Risa Ontiveros.
Yeah, Domingo there joining us on the line. Thanks, Kat. Keep safe. Take care. Well, on to more news now. Senate President Vicente Sotto III on Monday revealed several former senators will be seeking a return to the upper chamber in next year's elections. One of them is former senator and now Sorsogon Governor Francis Escudero. He now joins us on the program to tell us about his decision. Governor, welcome to the program and thank you for joining us today.
Carmina, magandang hapon sa ating televiewers at listeners. Magandang hapon din. Na-miss ko kayo.
Aba. At masaya naman kami at nagpakita ka ulit mula Sorsogon. But let's get to the chase here. We all heard it from Senate President Vicente Sotto III yesterday. He brought up your name, but we want to hear it from you. Are you running in the 2022 elections?
I confirm Senate President Tito Sotto's statements that I do plan to run for the Senate. I do plan to place my name once again in the ballot for the Senate in the hope that I will be able to do my part in so far as helping our country recover from this pandemic after this administration.
Earlier this year, though, Governor, you said that you would only run for the Senate if you have the numbers. How confident are you that you do have the numbers, or how confident are you in your numbers as we speak?
As I always say with respect to surveys, Carmina, whoever is ahead this early in the game should not be arrogant about it. Whoever is way behind should not be sad about it, because the numbers will change. The starting numbers that you will see, Carmina, you will have to see sometime in January or February. That's when the starting gun, insofar as the real numbers are concerned, for the upcoming elections.
All right, but what was the turning point here? Was this always the plan, just be governor for 3 years and then go on and go back to the Senate? Was Sorsogon sort of just a layover for you? Was that always the plan, Governor?
Actually, malaking bagay yung pandemic, Carmina, at yung LDR namin ni Hart, yung aming long-distance relationship. We thought we could do it and manage. But given the pandemic, LDR has been taking its toll, not only with me, but with a lot of people. And again, as I said, I would want to give my share in so far as helping the country recover. And as an additional point, I am not one of the fans of those who believe that there's only one last name that should govern or head or lead a province. We must be able to give chance to others to lead our province, who may even be better than I am.
Here's the thing, though. As governor, you were as closest as you could be to see the policies that you were making as a senator really impact on the lives on the ground. Why exchange that for going back to the national level? I know the personal side of it, but that must have been an experience, right? Seeing that change on the ground firsthand, Governor.
Well, seeing the change on the ground is a good thing, Carmina, but also being frustrated at the fact that some laws are out of touch with respect to the realities on the ground. And as governor, you cannot help the fact that more often than not be frustrated with certain policies being enunciated by the national government that are so detached with the needs and the realities of local government officials on the ground. I have been in discussions with a lot of governors, a lot of mayors, given the fact that I'm one of the local chief executives in the country, and they share the same frustration on several aspects and covering several sectors and departments.
Mm. Let's take the pandemic response as an example. What were the shortcomings there, and what were the gaps, the disconnects?
I'll give you one example, Carmina, one poignant example. Hospitals, both public and private, are having a difficult time because PhilHealth will only pay anyone who is infected by COVID-19 if he is confined for 14 days. And yet the Department of Health, although the Secretary of Health chairs the PhilHealth board, still maintains that after 10 days, you can be declared recovered already. So you have two choices. Release the patient after 10 days and not be paid by PhilHealth and be able to provide additional beds, or don't release him and you might lack beds, but you will be paid by PhilHealth. We should not be facing these choices in the middle of a pandemic, Carmina. And it's so easy to reconcile these two divergent and conflicting positions by the PhilHealth on the one hand and the DOH on the other hand, especially given the fact that the DOH is headed by the health secretary and the PhilHealth Board is chaired by the DOH Secretary. All it would take would be one meeting, I guess.
Yeah. And sorry to digress here, but you mentioned a very good point there. You know that a lot of people are now staying in emergency rooms for more than 10 days sometimes, right? And yet they can't even access, they're not eligible to use their PhilHealth. That's one of the reasons also why it's been frustrating for a lot of COVID-19 patients, Governor.
And from day one, Carmina, I've always been batting for a cure. It's a cure that will bring our lives back to normal. The area where the most vaccines have been deployed is NCR Plus. And yet, NCR Plus still has the highest restriction compared to other parts of the country. But if there is a cure for COVID already, and I hope DOH would, and FDA would explore that, then that would be easier insofar as the number of infections are concerned. And people can go back to their lives normally. I don't think it will reach this stage, but at some point it will. That if you have colds, you pop a pill. If you have this particular ailment, you pop a pill. And the lives of people don't have to be affected as it is right now.
And it shouldn't be a choice, meaning if we are in a pandemic response mode at this point, can it happen simultaneously that we're actually using our scientists, using their, their very intelligent and gifted scientists to go and look for a cure?
I hope they would explore, for example, what Israel is doing with respect to searching for a cure, the United States, New Zealand, Australia, because they are focusing on a cure, knowing and realizing that only 2% of the population worldwide and globally will be infected, and only 1% of that will become severe. So it would be easier to handle this with less strain on government resources if we will all work together towards finding a cure instead of inoculating over 7 billion people worldwide, and we don't even know how often we should be doing that. Is the efficacy good for 6 months? Is it good for a year? Do you have to inoculate again or simply do a booster? If you were given a Sinovac vaccine, can you take a booster from Pfizer? Nobody's there yet at this point in time. So we don't know what we will be looking forward to or backward to in 2022.
Okay, let's go back to 2022. Glad that you mentioned that. What else are you going to bring to the Senate that you haven't done so in your last terms?
As you said yourself, Carmina, my experience in the local government sector, legislation and executing laws are totally different things. And sometimes you have a tendency to be detached if you don't see what's going on the ground. I bring a wealth of experience coming from the local government sector, not only in our province, but as well as the entire country, given our communications with other governors and city mayors nationwide. In fact, if there would be one platform that should be brought, that would be to enable the local government units to decide for themselves more freely, because quite frankly, they know, we know better what we need than any armchair secretary or undersecretary simply holding office in an air-conditioned building in Metro Manila. I hope they will hear them out more often. I hope they will give them more leeway insofar as deciding for themselves whether we have a pandemic or not. I think they should give credit where credit is due, because local government officials have been doing a very good job, fairly good job, actually, at the local level in their respective provinces and cities.
But, you know, Governor, as you eye for that Senate seat, it is shaping up to be a quite crowded race. You know the many names that are being floated out there, and some are just waiting for the perfect timing to announce. But you and I both know there are a lot of names that you're going to go up against.
Well, if you look at it, Carmina, there are 10 re-electionists unless they run for higher office, and you're looking at 8 to 12 former senators who intend to go back to the Senate, and about 5 to 8 cabinet secretaries, incumbent cabinet secretaries, who intend to run as well. We're not even counting showbiz and other known personalities who intend to run. That's the beauty for me, Carmina, of a democracy. You get to put your name, put yourself out there, and let the people decide and choose. In my case, I've never prayed to win an election. I've always prayed for God's will to be done so that I would know what next things I would do after the 2022 elections. But for you not to place yourself out there and to offer what you can offer what you can give, I think that would be a disservice too. And you would be, in a way, selfish if you don't do so simply because you're thinking of your own welfare and safety.
you know, a lot of people are, as I said earlier, just keeping their cards close to their chest. They're not saying anything. In fact, some experts are saying, why not announce now? Give the people that the option as early as now. So for you, what made you decide that, yes, I'm going to confirm? Go ahead.
Well, probably, Carmina, because they actually haven't made up their minds. In my case, the path I want to do and take is clear, and it has been clear with me for quite some time. So there is no reason to really hide it. For those who haven't announced, I think it's not only a question of timing. I think it's more a question of they're not yet that sure of what they intend to do in the next elections, bearing in mind that given that our elections are computerized, they have to decide earlier. Before, when our elections were manual, they had to decide last day of filing sometime in February. Mm. Now they have to decide early, actually. And that gives people some concerns because it might be too early to decide. They might not have weighed all the factors that they should be weighing and considering in arriving at a major decision, not only in their lives, but also in the lives of 110 million Filipinos.
How is the NPC lineup? I'm assuming that, of course, you're going to run under NPC, correct? Or no?
Yes.
You are? Okay, so how is it shaping up? Are you going to field an entire slate of president, vice president, and an entire lineup of senators? What are the talks looking like?
As far as I know, Carmina, there are only two former senators and one incumbent senator from the NPC. I don't know if that number will increase, if they will be inviting others, because I'm not part of the leadership of the NPC. And I don't know if the NPC will be adopting other senatorial candidates as well. The NPC also hasn't decided in whose favor they will be aligning themselves insofar as the gamut of presidential candidates have been springing up left and right in the past few weeks.
Mm. But what about you? Have you decided?
On who to affiliate with? Carmina?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
probably after they file. Yeah. Probably after they file, all of them are qualified. I know all of them. I've worked with them, dealt with them all, and they're all qualified. I guess the question is, will they actually file come October? And will they still pursue their candidacy once we reach January? The last thing anyone wants, Carmina, is to affiliate yourself with a candidate who ultimately will not file or will withdraw before the campaign period starts sometime in February.
But what does the country need at this point, when we talk about the type of president that will lead the Philippines post the 2022 elections?
I'm looking for one qualification, and I guess that's what most of our people are looking for as well, Carmina. We should have a healing president, a president that can heal the economy given the damages brought about by the pandemic, a president that can heal our people given the pandemic itself, and a president that can heal our wide political divide, because no one president can bring back the economy, bring back our lives without the help of everyone else. I hope the next president will be a healing president in that he will be asking or she will be asking for the help of other candidates as well, be able to cure and immediately heal the divide that the elections would be creating, and be able to work with everyone, as in everyone, and not simply limit himself or herself to their own groups or their own parties, because this is a situation where we need all hands on deck, so to speak, that we need the help of everyone. Now, I understand that we're leading to an election, so you can see some political divides, but I hope after the elections, our next president, whomsoever he or she may be, will be able to bring everyone together, be open to ask for help from everyone, and be open as well to listening to everyone.
Will another Duterte be that healing president?
It depends. It depends on how Mayor Inday Sara will be carrying herself after the elections. Carmina, you have to understand, during the elections, people sometimes wear a mask, a different costume, given the necessities, requirements of a campaign and the election. It will all depend on who and what kind of a president he or she will be after they win, if they will reach out to their opponents or will they continue with the bickering. I hope our next president will be able to heal that divide. And I think Mayor Inday Sara can do that, given the fact that she has done that in her own city in Davao after she won the elections in previous campaigns.
Will the prosecution of President Duterte post the 2022 elections lead to the kind of healing that you're describing?
That is part of the legal process, and everybody has the right to file a case against a former president. Given the fact that our constitution merely protects the president and gives him immunity during his term in office. However, let me go back locally. My advice to our local candidates here in the province is, I hope they won't focus on filing cases against their opponents because they might be bogged down and too busy focusing on filing cases against the former incumbents and not have enough time to do what needs to be done for the country. We should be moving forward instead of always looking backwards and in the past, without, of course, removing the accountability that may be attached to anyone who abused his or her power during this administration.
Okay, finally, Governor Chiz, you know, 2016 was such a learning year for everyone across the board. What lessons from then are you bringing with you in your attempt to in your attempt to secure a Senate seat come 2022?
Not run for president or vice president, Carmina, because that's not for me. That's the most important lesson, I guess, that I learned from 2016. And to make sure that while you're still strong, offer yourself so that you're still strong by the time you retire, so that you get to enjoy your time with your own family. I have no plans of growing old in office, Carmina. This is the last time probably that I'll be running, in the hope of contributing whatever I can contribute at this time. And after that, there are 110 million Filipinos. Probably they're even better than I am with respect to either running for the Senate or any other position. It's best that we give them that chance when the time comes.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Sorsogon Governor Francis Escudero, thank you so much for joining us today. Take care. Keep safe. Nice to see you again.
Likewise, Carmina, keep safe. Maganda hapon sa ating lahat.
All right, from there, party list lawmaker Carlos Zarate concerned over the possible role of President Duterte's former social media manager in government. See, the Philippine Finance Department has tapped Nick Gabonada as its communication strategist. Zarate wonders how that may affect the narrative the Finance Department wants to push on social media, especially as government takes on more debt to deal with the pandemic. Bayamuna also seeking an investigation into allegations a certain government official is putting up so-called troll farms all over the country. Zarate says troll farms are a threat not only to the 2022 elections, but also to the country's democracy itself.
If you have these troll farms amplifying misinformation, lies, even fake news, this will clearly impact on how our people will decide in the conduct of an election. No? Can you imagine a president elected by trolls? No? Or so we'll have a troll president for that matter.
The opening of LRT2 East Extension Project has been moved to July to give way to more preparatory works. The inauguration of the Marikina and Antipolo stations were originally set today, June 22, but was moved to July 5. The postponement was made following delays in the arrival of some critical equipment. The pandemic has also restricted the travel of foreign technical experts. The LRT2 East Extension Project broke ground in June 2015. A rare pear-shaped diamond up for grabs at Sotheby's using cryptocurrencies, marking another first for the emerging asset. Let's take a look.
Sotheby's announced on Monday that a rare pear-shaped diamond that is expected to fetch up to $15 million can be bought at auction next month using cryptocurrencies. Sotheby's said it would be the first time a diamond of such size has been offered for public purchase with cryptocurrency, adding that no other physical object of such high value has been available for sale with the digital asset. The 101.38-carat diamond, dubbed the Key 10138, is one of just 10 diamonds of more than 100 carats ever to come to auction, only two of which were pear-shaped. Sotheby's said the name of the flawless diamond is intended to reflect the integral role that keys occupy in the world of cryptocurrencies. It carries a pre-sale estimate of $10 to $15 million and will be sold on July 9th in Hong Kong. Bitcoin or Ether, as well as traditional money, will be accepted as payment.
It's our opinion that with cryptocurrency, you're able to have new clients who maybe had not previously been looking at auctions for objects, works of art, diamonds, coming to us and being potential purchasers for the stone.
Cryptocurrencies have had a volatile year with explosive growth and major tumbles. Regulators and policymakers all over the world have warned about the emerging assets volatility and that Bitcoin facilitates money laundering and other illicit uses. But regardless, crypto has seen broader adoption.
La ley de Bitcoin.
El Salvador this month became the first country to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. And in the United States, the National Republican Congressional Committee last week said it will accept donations in cryptocurrency. Sotheby's in May sold a Banksy for $12.9 million in cryptocurrency, the first instance of a work of physical art sold by a major auction house that was bought with the decentralized currency.
The director behind some of the most popular blockbuster movies like Jaws and Jurassic Park signs a major deal with Netflix. Steven Spielberg is set to produce several new movies for the streaming service every year. While Monday's announcement did not specify whether Spielberg will personally direct any of the movies, the partnership is a boost for Netflix amid increasing competition with Disney Plus and HBO Max. It also marks a big turnaround from when Spielberg was skeptical about movie streaming. He had even moved to bar Netflix films from Oscars eligibility back in 2019. In sports, more NBA stars committing to play for Team USA in the upcoming Tokyo Olympics. The latest to accept their invites are former MVP James Harden of the Brooklyn Nets and Miami Heat star center Bam Adebayo. Others who have committed to play for the U.S. are former MVP Kevin Durant, Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum, Draymond Green, and Devin Booker. If he plays in Tokyo, Durant is expected to become Team USA's all-time leading scorer in the Olympics. He currently trails Carmelo Anthony by just 25 points. Organizers of the Tokyo Olympics decide to limit the number of spectators in each venue once the games kick off next month. And as this report tells us, those attending won't be allowed to shout or cheer during the event.
Olympics organizers will cap the number of spectators for each 2020 Tokyo Games venue at 10,000. Just days after experts said hosting the event without fans was the least risky option. Now those who do attend won't be allowed to shout or cheer on their favorite athletes. Organizers said in a statement that the limit for the sporting event, scheduled to begin on July 23rd, will be set at 50% of venue capacity, up to a maximum of 10,000 people. That limit could be further reduced depending on the provisions of anti-infection measures. Spectators will have to wear masks and will be asked to travel directly to venues and then return straight home. Overseas fans have already been banned from attending the games. The cap followed five-way talks among Tokyo 2020 organisers, Japanese and Tokyo government officials, and the International Olympic and Paralympic panels. Before the meeting, IOC President Thomas Bach said the vaccination rate for athletes and officials residing in the Olympic Village was now well over 80%. Japan has largely avoided explosive coronavirus outbreaks that have devastated other countries, but its vaccine rollout has been slow, and its medical system has been pushed to its limits in some areas. The Japanese public is still largely opposed to the games being held this summer, according to local polls. Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga has said he would not rule out holding the Olympics without spectators if the capital was under a COVID-19 state of emergency.
College athletes in the U.S. score a huge legal victory. And as this report tells us, the Supreme Court ruled in their favor in their compensation case against the U.S. NCAA.
In a landmark victory for college athletes, the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday ruled against the NCAA in its bid to maintain limits on non-cash payments to student athletes. The court, in a unanimous 9-0 decision, said the NCAA was violating antitrust laws. Justice Brett Kavanaugh delivered a blistering rebuke of college sports governing body, writing that the NCAA should not, quote, build a massive money-raising enterprise on the backs of student athletes who are not fairly compensated. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate. The NCAA is not above the law. The NCAA had argued that curbs on non-cash educational perks such as computers, science equipment, and musical instruments protect the, quote, amateur status of college athletes. But critics say that amateur status has long been a fantasy, with college sports bringing in billions of dollars in revenue. The case involves athletes at the highest level of college sports: NCAA Division I men's and women's basketball players, and the Football Bowl subdivision. Although it did not involve direct payments to athletes, the wider issue of player compensation, including the ability of schools to profit off of players' names, images, and likenesses, has increasingly become a point of contention. Joining the NCAA in defending the non-cash compensation cap were all of the big money conferences, including the Big Ten, Southeastern Conference, and the Pac-12 Conference.
Las Vegas Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib becomes the first active NFL player to come out as gay. Nassib made the announcement in an Instagram post.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds. That's all I have for you guys. I hope you have a great day. Work hard.
Nassib's announcement was hailed throughout the NFL. Commissioner Roger Goodell said representation matters and that the league is proud of him for courageously sharing his truth. The Raiders also expressed support for Nassib, with coach John Gruden saying, quote, I learned a long time ago what makes a man different is what makes him great. End of quote. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it to your ANC.